Welcome to the Focus Today podcast with Perry Atkinson.
Well, welcome to Focus Today. I'm your host, Perry Atkinson, and there's been some talk in the news lately about an escalating possibility of war with China. Serious stuff. And there's a lot being said about that and comments being made. We are honored to have with us today Charles Sam Faddis. He's a veteran, retired CIA operations officer, senior fellow with the Center for Security Policy. He's also senior editor of AN Magazine, Newsmax, The Hill, and he's also the author of Beyond Repair, The Decline and the Fall of the CIA. So we're really honored to have him today. By the way, there is a website here, CenterForSecurityPolicy.org, CenterForSecurityPolicy.org. Sam, thanks for your time. How are you today?
Doing very well. Thank you for having me, sir.
You bet. Serious stuff. We're seeing it in the news. Various people have commented on the possibility and the escalation of this. What's your thinking?
Well, it is serious stuff, and it is a very real danger. And it's one of those things that I think we have sort of talked about generally for a long time. But like a lot of things like that, it just always seems like, okay, it's out there in the future. It's never really going to happen. It's becoming more real by the day, unfortunately.
What's driving it?
Well, the first thing that's driving it is we have entered into a completely ruinous relationship with communist China, right? We made a decision decades ago to climb in bed economically with a totalitarian communist regime. We represented that this was all about democratizing them. They were somehow going to become more liberal and like us more as they became wealthier. I don't know that anybody ever believed that or if that was just the way it was sold to the American people. What we do know at this point is it's demonstrably not true, and that what we have done is make this enemy much richer and much more powerful, and it now has a military that dwarfs what it had 20, 30 years ago. So the first thing driving it is we've actually given the Chinese the capacity to challenge us in East Asia. They are now in a position potentially to win a war against us.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack here. We've seen the contrast, Sam, between two administrations, the Trump administration and the Biden administration. How would you summarize that?
Well, I think that Trump's basic policy here was to begin to turn the ship, if you will, to recognize the growing danger, recognize that the real long-term solution, if you're smart, is to stop enriching communist China and disengage. Now, you clearly can't just do that economically at this point overnight, so that is a gradual process. But he began that process, and he began to really take it seriously. All of that, I mean, in short, you know, to make it the short version is all of that went out the window the moment Joe Biden sat down in the Oval Office. I mean, to be honest with you, if you look at every national security and foreign policy decision Joe Biden's made since he came to office, I can't think of a single one that the Xi Jinping, the leader of communist China, would disapprove of. I mean, if he was or is taking direction directly from Beijing, you couldn't ask for anything more. So it has been nothing but wins for the communist Chinese since Joe came in.
Which underlines a lot of things that we hear about the connection between the Biden family and China. And now, is it being played out in foreign policy? I don't know. Do you have an opinion on that?
I think that we should recognize that we have mountains of evidence of the Bidens taking vast sums of foreign money, and nobody has given them more money than the communist Chinese. And we have the demonstrated contacts between this Biden crime family and known Chinese intelligence officers. None of this is speculation. This is fact. Nobody disputes any of this. And now we have the actions taken by this administration and actually Joe's record for years before that. We ought to be getting to the bottom of that, right? If it turns out there's nothing there and Joe's just grossly incompetent. I guess that's the good news. That would be good news in this context. But we ought to be with great dispatch figuring out what exactly is going on. We are, of course, not doing that. We're acting in general like we can't see any of this.
Given the seriousness of this situation and the potential, backed by some of the evidence that you quoted, that there seems to be a connection with the family and China, why isn't our government investigating this?
That is, as we used to say, right, the $60,000 question. If you go on the Federal Bureau of Investigation's website, you will see right there in the Bureau's own words that the number one counterintelligence threat to the United States of America is Chinese intelligence and the Chinese Communist Party. So, not my opinion. That is the official assessment of the FBI. The FBI is, by law, the number one counterintelligence agency in the U.S. government. Their number one charter is to address this, and our number one threat is coming from the Chinese Communists. And yet, somehow or another, the FBI does not have time to get to this threat. I mean, they got time to investigate moms at school board meetings and to demand to know what people are praying silently outside abortion clinics, but somehow they just can't manage to scrape up the resources. You have to think that, unfortunately, and I'm not trying to condemn every member of the FBI. I worked with that agency, for many, many years and have friends in the agency. But you have to think that at the top, this is political. There is a political decision not to pursue this because it is the Biden administration.
Goes to the subtitle of your book, The Decline and the Fall of the CIA. How does that play into this equation?
Yeah, well, I mean, my comments were focused on the FBI, but I don't mean to suggest that they're the only people who are turning a blind eye to this. Where is the Central Intelligence Agency? You know, I served with pride in the agency. I have a tremendous number of friends still inside. I think it's a critically important agency, but there's no question that you have seen that it, too, has become politicized, right? I mean, it was up to its eyeballs in involvement in this absurd attempt to accuse Donald Trump of being an agent of Putin and all of that. The CIA was involved. I mean, look, we have a broad, very deep problem at the top of our most important law enforcement and intelligence agencies. And we need those agencies because there really are threats out there that we need them to be focused on. But we can't have them politicized. They need to be doing their jobs and steering clear of American politics.
I want to come back to this escalating stress between the United States and China. And it seems to me that the ultimate test to where this may go is going to be Taiwan, stuck right in the middle of all of this. Given this administration and its foreign policy decisions and failures, do you see a move of China towards Taiwan before this administration is over?
Yeah. Yes. I think that we ought to be extremely concerned that what the Chinese see is a window of opportunity. Taiwan is, as far as they're concerned, Taiwan is an internal matter, right? They regard it as a breakaway province. From their perspective, a move on Taiwan would not be invading a foreign country or taking action against a foreign country. It would be bringing back into the fold part of their nation. Now, we can debate the history and all of that associated with that, but it doesn't matter. That's Beijing's official position. Whether you think Biden is taking direction from Beijing or is just the most incompetent president we've ever had in the Oval Office, either way, you have a window of opportunity that it's hard to believe that the Chinese will pass up, right? And if I had to sketch out for you a scenario on how this plays out, I would say this. The Chinese impose a blockade. They have ships and aircraft in position to do that every day. All they really have to do is announce they're doing it and start intercepting ships and aircraft. Taiwan will be out of energy and out of food in 60 days. So, and there is no other country on earth that will break that blockade unless the United States takes point, right? The Japanese, the Filipinos, the Brits, the French, they might help us. If we're not in the game, there's no way they're taking that on. So now you're down to a simple calculus. Do you believe that Joe Biden will order the United States military to break that blockade and begin to fire on Chinese ships and aircraft? I will not bet a single cent that he will do that. He will watch and make noises about the necessity for the United Nations to convene and consider the matter and all sorts of other chatter. And meanwhile, on Taiwan, the clock will be ticking, right? Chinese don't have to land. All they have to do is starve the place into submission.
Okay, there's a test case before the world today as to whether or not China going after Taiwan as a rogue province is being played out every day in the news with Russia going after Ukraine. And we don't have the UN stepping in there, and the United States just throws a lot of words and maybe a couple of tanks over there. But you got the same scenario going on there as you would with China going after Taiwan. And if the world isn't upset with Russia taking over Ukraine, then what's the world going to do with China and Taiwan?
Well, it's a similar situation, but we keep in mind that, you know, Russia at this point is a third-rate power. I mean, everybody keeps talking about the Russians fantasizing about the Red Army as it existed in 1945 or before the wall went down. You know, Russia is a not particularly wealthy country with a military, a tiny fraction of the size that it had once upon a time. And frankly, the Russians are not doing very well in Ukraine. They're bleeding to death militarily. Against the Chinese military, which is now vastly superior, and keeping in mind the economic price you would pay. I mean, if you stand up to the Communist Chinese and the Communist Chinese stop sending you, name any product, because we rely on them for everything at this point, including pharmaceuticals, you're in a world of hurt, right? So, you know, if you can't get people to stand up to Russia, there is no chance on earth you're going to get them to stand up to the Communist Chinese. I mean, you think about the economic disruption that would happen from just a blockade of Taiwan. Mm-hmm. The Taiwanese produce a huge proportion of the chips, the semiconductors, which basically, you know, everything runs on those now, the whole modern economy. And if you look at the high-end stuff, the stuff that you really need for significant devices, they produce, I don't know, well over 50% of the entire supply for the entire planet. I mean, if you blockade Taiwan and those things stop coming, right there, you're talking economic Armageddon. You're talking a meltdown. You're not talking prices go up a little bit and it's uncomfortable. Banks stop being able to handle transactions. Telephones don't work. Satellites don't. Communications shut. The whole modern economy shuts down. That's what we're talking about. So, I mean, we're talking about something on almost an unimaginable scale.
Where does Japan play into this scenario?
Well, the Japanese have recognized very clearly that what's happening here, the threat from China, and they are actually building up in the midst of a significant military buildup and acquiring capabilities they haven't had since the Second World War, and they are cooperating with us. But again, they're not going to take on the Chinese. And I don't care how many other actors line up with them, unless the United States of America is involved. I mean, Americans may get tired of this, but that's the reality all over the world. If we don't take the lead, nobody else is standing up to Beijing. They're not starting that fight without us in that. This adds to the issue over Taiwan, right? If the Chinese starve Taiwan into submission and basically force Taiwan to take some sort of Hong Kong status, you know, one country, two systems, and we've seen that movie. We know how that ends. Yeah. They allow that to play out for a few years, and then there are no more two systems. They just absorb you. Yeah. what are the Japanese going to do? They have to live in that neighborhood. If we don't stop that, they're faced with a new reality. The reality is they're face to face with the Chinese without any American help. So they will be forced to start accommodating them.
Yeah. Let me take a quick break. What an honor to have with us today, Charles Sam Faddis. By the way, his website is centerforsecuritypolicy.org. His book is called Beyond Repair, The Decline and the Fall of the CIA. There's a cover of the, a picture of the cover of the book there on our TV screen. And we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
We'll be back to this week's interview in just a few seconds. In the meantime, we want to let you know that you can watch this interview, plus many more exclusive interviews that happen this week on the Dove's Daily TV and radio show by visiting our website, thedove.us. And while you're there, sign up for our free daily devotional, The Word for You Today. 3 months of daily readings that will connect you with God's Word. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. What an honor to have with us today Charles Sam Faddis. He's a veteran, retired CIA operations officer, senior fellow with the Center for the Security Policy. He also is the author of a book called Beyond Repair, The Decline and the Fall of the CIA. A picture of the cover of his book there on the screen for those of you watching on the Dove TV network. His website is centerforsecuritypolicy.org. We're talking about the rising concern of a conflict with China. It's more than just talk. It's something really on the table. Gosh, Sam, you've opened up so many questions here. If China feels that they could squeeze Taiwan into submission just through economic sanctions, and their own economy seems at times to be in a shamble to the point where they can change the value of their currency on a whim, and yet they rely so much on the American trade to exist, aren't they kind of in a corner themselves?
Well, there is no question that where they are now, that if we're, you know, I was talking before about economic Armageddon. Okay, look, if you start this fight and you blockade Taiwan and you start taking down the global economy, is that going to have massive impact inside China? Negative impact. Without question, that absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, if things are not being exported, if there's a war in progress, and we're suffering, yes, they are suffering too. But here's the critical factor I think you have to put in here: the decisions in China are not made by some democratic process; they're made by the leadership of the Chinese Communist Party. And increasingly, that is a dictatorship of Xi Jinping, mm-hmm. who is the head of the party. You know, he's effectively at this point the emperor, and he has consolidated power in a way. Really, I mean, he really has reversed a trend that was ongoing, where power was diffusing a little bit and centered it in himself. And he has a singular focus on this idea of China becoming the dominant power on the planet. When the Chinese communists have demonstrated in the past, look at the actions of Mao Zedong, that the suffering of their own people and even the death of millions of Chinese is irrelevant to them in furtherance of the revolution and of the, you know, of this ultimate victory they are searching. I mean, Mao at one point ordered huge numbers of Chinese to leave the cities and go to the countryside to become peasants again and farmers as we return to the land as part of this whole communist ideology and revolution. In the process, he killed, people are still unclear on how many people he killed, but massive numbers, many millions of people died. He didn't care because that's not the point. They are irrelevant. It was consolidating his power and control. So these lockdowns that you've seen in China for years, a very large portion of the rationale for that is actually Xi Jinping crushing the power of forces in southern China that he thinks have become too close to Western capitalism. Too many people down there making too much money who in these cities, and they're beginning to think of themselves as having connections to the West as opposed to just doing what Beijing tells them. So a big part of his objective in locking down these cities has been to destroy that political power. Now, how many people have died or suffered as a result? It is an irrelevant consideration to him. So we should not say, okay, he's going to make a rational decision in the sense of a rational decision based on what we regard as priorities. We have to look at it through his eyes. He's looking to make themselves the... They want to be the top dog on the entire planet.
Yeah.
And whatever they have to do, they'll do.
Yeah. I get that. I really do. But I'm wondering, can he or do you think he... I know it's the power of intimidation. I get it. I truly do. But can he totally squelch the spirit, the human spirit?
No. I mean, I think you saw that with the protests that occurred there. A few months ago. I mean, despite this incredibly capable, incredibly powerful police state that he has created with all sorts of high tech capabilities, all of a sudden he found that in the heart of these Chinese cities, he had huge numbers of average Chinese citizens standing up. In a place where there's no real criminal justice system, right? You don't have any rights. If you get grabbed by the cops, you may never be seen again. That's real. Mm-hmm. And still we saw Chinese with the courage to stand up and say, we demand democracy. So can he completely crush it? No. Can they topple him? That's a whole different question.
Okay, because there's this continued talk of the coalition between China, Russia, and Iran. And yet Iran and Russia have their own civil unrest to the point where it could topple the regimes. I mean, let's face it, this is serious stuff. That leaves us with the equation of the United States, South Korea, and Japan trying to defend Taiwan. I mean, I don't know if I got all the players straight, but that's kind of how I see it.
Yeah, well, there are definitely unrest. I mean, the unrest in Iran is huge and very significant, and quite frankly, we ought to be encouraging it because that country has lived in hell now for decades, and the Iranians are great people and deserve a lot better. We definitely ought to be encouraging democracy in all of these nations. In the short term, if the Chinese move on Taiwan, it comes down to, are we willing to lead the alliance that will have to stand up? And goes back to Joe Biden.
Yeah,
he's the commander in chief, as much as we wish he wasn't.
With the continued cancellation of TikTok, is that kind of got to be a rub to the Chinese, right?
The Chinese are incredibly sensitive to this, and then if you watch. What's interesting to watch is how they react. I mean, they react to all of this stuff. And you can see it by watching the American media outlets that then begin to parrot whatever the talking points were that came from Beijing, right? I mean, it's really kind of frightening. I mean, we had watch how many Congress people all of a sudden stand. Anytime we start to lean on Chinese intelligence, which is basically robbing us blind all day, every day in this country, that, you know, rampaging around the country, stealing every secret we have and suborning our officials. Anytime we try to lean on them, man, you know, dozens of Congress people will stand up on the floor of Congress and accuse us of racism and xenophobia. And you're like, good God, you can see the strings directly from Beijing. This is terrifying.
A term has fallen out of the narrative these days, and to me, it's still very serious and probably a big player, and that's the term intellectual property that Chinese has stolen or they have negotiated American companies away from.
Yeah.
How big of a problem is this continuing to be?
Massive. Nothing has changed. I mean, Donald Trump began to get a handle on this. He began to push back, shut things down, force Chinese that were spying on us out, impose rules across the board. We were beginning to get our arms around this. The second that Joe Biden sat down in the Oval Office, that all of that was switched off. We had a China initiative in the FBI focused on Chinese spy. Literally the first day in office, Joe Biden shut that down. I mean, because it was apparently racist. And apparently racist because most of the Chinese intelligence officers we were finding, and this is shocking. I mean, yeah, probably it's a good thing you're sitting down. Turns out most of those Chinese intelligence officers were Chinese, and therefore, by definition, arresting them was, we were arresting disproportionately Chinese, and therefore we were racist. And we had to shut it down.
Yeah, and the other thing that's gone away from the narrative is that a lot of the government retirement plans are invested in Chinese companies that are allowed to trade on the American Stock Exchange. I mean, how dumb are we?
This is insane. I mean, I always say to people, imagine it's the height of the Cold War and Ronald Reagan's in office and we're worried about Russian tanks coming out of East Germany and heading for, you know, across Germany to Paris. We're in this life and death struggle. And imagine that we were investing our money in tank factories in Moscow, Kalashnikov factories elsewhere in Russia. We would have never considered that. Are you insane? We're going to invest our money in our enemy. We're handing our retirees savings. By the way, this includes the retirement funds for retired American military and intelligence personnel. So you could spend your whole life defending the country and then to turn around and find out that right now your life savings are being used to help fund factories in China to build hypersonic missiles to send U.S. aircraft carriers to the bottom of the Pacific. That's not science fiction or speculation. That's happening right now.
All right.
That's how crazy our policy is right now.
So if there's any conflict that comes out of China, whether it's towards Taiwan or anything else, the value of that goes through the floor and they lost it anyway.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, look, we're back to this point. If we end up in a conflict with the Chinese, everybody on both sides of this conflict is going to lose catastrophically. Right. This is the world economy right now. China is the factory floor for the planet, and we're completely economically intertwined. So back to, I think, you know, my point of origin, which is you've got to recognize the insanity of the idea of being economically intertwined with your number one enemy on the planet that wishes to destroy you and supplant you.
Yeah,
that's where we are. So you got to change course. Now, can you do that overnight? Obviously not, because you'll wreck the economy. We're way too dependent on them. But you can start ratcheting that down, right? You can start step by step by step, either bringing those factories home or dispersing those factories to friendly nations around the globe. But we can't continue down this road of being dependent on communist Chinese.
One last question. Given what you just said there, Sam, it seems to me that the number one thing we ought to do is at least get pharmaceuticals out of China.
Yeah, I mean, pharmaceuticals are a great place to start. It is crazy. I mean, just think about the fact that we're talking about a shooting war, and you're talking about medical care for wounded American servicemen, and then you're talking about having to rely on your enemy for the drugs you will need to treat them. Like, that doesn't make a lot of sense, right? And I mean, for some drugs right now that are used routinely in American hospitals, 95% of them come from China. The Chinese can flip that switch any day with catastrophic results.
Yeah. Thanks for your time. We value it. Let me say to our viewers and listeners, check out his website, centerforsecuritypolicy.org. Check out his book, Beyond Repair, The Decline and the Fall of the CIA. There's a picture, again, of the cover of the book on the screen there. Sam, can we get you back? You're fascinating.
Happy to come back anytime. Appreciate the time.
All right, thank you.
Thank you for listening to this week's Focus Today podcast. Remember, you can visit our website to check out all the interviews we did this week on our daily Focus Today TV show at thedove.us. And if you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate us and share it with your friends.